This is a podcast from the children's radio station Fun Kids. Listen on DAB digital radio across the UK or online at funkidslive.com.
Welcome to the Fun Kids Science Weekly. This is where we talk about the most amazing, weird and wonderful things in the universe. Like, if this show was a party, it'd be one that you really want to go to, but you just can't make it there because only the most dangerous things are allowed in. Well, guess what? You're allowed into this one. Don't worry, you're invited. You're my plus one. My name's Dan. Hello. We're talking about a robot today that's looking for lost meteorites. Also, we'll learn about a disorder that can make you die of laughter. And in a sec, we'll chat to a herpetologist. That's someone who loves creatures that you just wouldn't really think could be pets. You know, you can't pat them, give them a squeeze, like lizards, amphibians, reptiles, and he's got over 200 of them. We'll get more about that in a little bit. First, let's catch up with our very own lizard. This is Echo Gecko, who helps us look at how the environment around us works. And today, we're headed to the desert.
Echo Gecko is brought to you by Fun Kids, with the British Ecological Society, advancing ecology and making it count.
Hello, I'm Echo Gecko, a lizard who loves ecology. You might not think you have much in common with a slippery fish, but all living things are connected. Ecology shows us where these connections are. Why don't you join me as we find out more? Woohoo! Today, I'm riding the waves in the open ocean. I'm a long way from land, but that doesn't mean I'm all alone. The ocean is packed with life, and it all starts with the phytoplankton, the tiniest plants in the ocean. Look, there's some over there. Plants need sun to survive, but as sunlight only reaches a little way down through the water, billions of teeny-weeny phytoplankton live near the surface and make a tasty meal for tiny creatures called zooplankton, who in turn are eaten by bigger creatures like mollusks and crabs. Let's go down and have a look. Look at that over there. It's a big squid. They are one of the most common mollusks in the ocean. And although he's related to the snails in our garden, these chaps have a massive advantage. Eyes. Or at least eyes that are more like ours than a garden snail's. They need them because as well as being a predator, they're also prey to bigger fish. And those larger fish are just what a shark likes to sink his teeth into. Like all creatures at the top of the food chain, sharks are pretty rare, or at least much rarer than those at the bottom of the food chain. Remember our teeny-weeny phytoplankton? But rare or not, here's one now. Crikey, he's a big one. Let's get out of here.
Eco Bite. Closer to home, did you know you can see ecology in action in a pond? We can't live underwater in a pond or an ocean, but lots of things can because of the way they have adapted to their environment. Whilst the smallest creatures breathe through exposed membranes which absorb the oxygen they need as they go about their business, larger creatures need to breathe much more air than that. Water spiders and water boatmen have air sacs, which you may be able to see if you look closely. Whilst mosquito larvae use a breathing tube, a bit like a snorkel, to get air from above the water. And fish, including sharks, breathe through gills, slit-like openings just behind their heads. Join us again next time when we find out more about ecology on Fun Kids. Echo Gecko is brought to you by Fun Kids with the British Ecological Society, advancing ecology and making it count.
You can catch up on all our brilliant Echo Gecko episodes for free on your phone or tablet. Go to wherever you get your podcasts from, you know, places like iTunes. Also, you can download them through the Fun Kids app, and you can have a listen at any time over at funkidslive.com. Now we'll chat to a man who shares his bedroom with 100 snails, 5 spiders, and loads more strange creatures in just a sec. First, let's spin the Fun Kids wheel of shoutouts to see who's getting a hello on the show this week. So basically, this wheel is full of names of people who give us a review on the iTunes podcast store. Whoever it stops, we say hello to. Stopping. Stopped, there we go. It's on, let me see, Backflip JR. Hello, Backflip JR. Strange name, but we won't get into it. I won't really mention it because you've left us a nice review and that's all we really care about. Thank you so much, Backflip, for listening to the show and for letting other people what you think of it. How about this? If you right now are loving the show, if you're learning so much about science and the most amazing things in the universe around us, why don't you let someone that you don't know about what we're doing? The easiest way to do that is to open up the iTunes podcast store, find the Fun Kids Science Weekly, and leave us a nice review. 5 stars always helps. Write your name on it too. Then I'll stick it on the Fun Kids wheel of shoutouts, and you might get a hello next week. It's the Fun Kids Science Weekly. Now, our special guest today is a herpetologist, and that means that he loves his reptiles, amphibians, lizards, and at home he's got over 200 different pets. Ross Hickles, hello.
Hiya, how you doing?
I'm very well, thank you. Welcome to the show. So 200 pets at home, talk me through them. What can we find when we set foot through your door?
A mixture of things, really. I've got about 25 snakes or so. I've got loads of bugs, loads of cockroaches, millipedes, a lot of snails, lizards, newts, you name it. There's a big mixture of everything.
Well, I've got a list. So 25 snakes, 10 lizards, yep. 2 turtles, 15 frogs, 7 salamanders, 100 snails, 30 giant snails, 50 slugs, 5 spiders, 30 millipedes, and 10 cockroaches.
It sounds about right.
I mean, it's a struggle to say, let alone to keep an eye on them all. What was the very first one that you got? What started this collection?
Originally, I was about 6 years old, and my dad brought home a pair of corn snakes for me and my sisters. And then, yeah, it kind of just escalated from there.
So with the snakes then, when many people would see a snake in the wild, they'd leap up, they'd run for their lives. What are you seeing in the snakes that makes you kind of, I guess, love them more than any other person?
I don't know, really, to be honest. I mean, I love looking at them. I'm really fascinated by the animals themselves. I think they're very, very misunderstood. They're also very important for the world, so.
25 of them. Do they all live in the same tank at home?
No, I've got different species. Some are babies that I've bred myself at home. Some are really big, so they live by themselves, but they're all completely different animals, so they all have their own area.
So talk me through the range of species of snakes that you've got. There are 25. How many species do you have, and how do you care for them differently?
I've got about 8 species, and they all have their own different requirements. So some are more desert species, some like really hot tropical rain. They're all completely different, so everything has a completely different setup.
So if you've got some that like deserts and some that likes the rain, how do you mirror that in your home? Do you have separate rooms that do separate things? What goes on where you live, Ross?
No, everything's in the same room. So I actually converted my bedroom into basically being a reptile room. They've all got their own individual tanks, and they've all got basically different thermostats that have different temperatures. So some can sit at about 28 degrees and some can sit at about 26 or 25. Some are very dry and some get misted 2 or 3 times a day.
What's the most difficult creature that you've got in your bedroom to look after? Which one requires the most care and attention?
I don't know, really. I would kind of just get used to it. I have a pair of Malayan leaf frogs at home, which are quite delicate. They require a lot of attention.
So how do you give it to them? What do they need every single day?
So they're quite small frogs, they do eat quite a lot of food, so they have about sort of 25-30 little tiny crickets every single day. They get a lot of rain, a lot of mist, and they've got a little pool of water, so.
And the snails as well. 100 snails, 30 giant snails. How do you look after a snail? I know it sounds such an easy question, but they seem to be fine by their own in the back garden. What do you have to do to care for them when they're in your living room?
Different things, like I say, some of them are water snails, so I have a species of ramhorn snail which like fairly coldish water, and they're quite easy to look after. You know, they have sand substrate on the bottom, they've got a filter that keeps it nice and clean, and then they get things like cucumber to feed on. So
now, you told us earlier about the 2 corn snakes that your dad brought home.
Yep.
Then what happened? How did you then move on this passion for herpetology into having a bedroom full of animals and now a career working with creatures?
It was just a bit strange. I mean, I say they were at my dad's house, and then he asked what if one day I wanted to take one home, and one became 2 became 4. You name it, it kind of happened. I started breeding them, and I think at the highest point I had like 100 baby snakes or something. I started working with fish when I was 15, and it kind of just escalated from there.
And what have you learned about how all these animals are the same? I know you've got everything from, as I say, spiders to snails to snakes to lizards. So there are a lot of differences in the way you have to care for them. What are some of the similarities?
Well, I have a few animals that come from similar regions. So, for example, I keep some big spiders at home. They live very, very close in range to each other, so I can keep them at the same temperatures. They live completely separate, but they can set the same temperatures and have the same requirements.
And where do you go to get them? I know that sounds, again, such a simple question, but if you're talking about, what was the one that you mentioned earlier, the Malaysian frog?
A Malaysian leaf frog.
So where do you go to get a Malaysian leaf frog from?
Well, they're quite difficult to get, really. I got them for a friend of mine, so I don't really buy a lot of my animals. I rescue a lot of my animals. And some of them are just bred and just never wanted to get rid of.
Where was this friend, Ross? It sounds very, very dark and mysterious. I don't know any friends that could deal me with a Malaysian leaf frog.
Well, I've been working in zoos for over 10 years, so you do bump into people and you get to talk to people like similar things to you, and some people breed a lot of stuff at home, some people keep a lot of stuff, and every now and then, you know, they want to move on a couple, and so do I occasionally, but nothing's left my house for a very long time.
Well, and now obviously you can't move house because you've got to take half a rainforest with you.
Well, yeah, when I look for a new house, I'll get an extra room just in case.
Talk me through your day then. From the moment you wake up to the moment you go to bed, and I know you've got to go to work at Sea Life London during that, but most of your day must be taken up looking after these creatures that you've got at home.
It's not too bad. Most of the systems run pretty much automatically, so the lights come on automatically and go off automatically. A lot of spray systems in there as well. So normally I get up about 5 o'clock, and then I have about half an hour to get ready, check on my animals and make sure everything's got nice, clear, clean water. I tend to feed lizards in the morning, so they've got all day to forage and look for food. I come to work at Sea Life London via the train and everything, and I start here about 8 o'clock in the morning, and I go home about 4 o'clock, and in that day I do a bit of everything. I help the rest of the team make shark feeds, and I feed the spiders and the lizards and stuff like that. I go home, it takes me about 2 hours to get home or so, and same to come into work, and then just start feeding my frogs for the evening, eat a bit of food, relax a little bit, and end up going to bed about 10 o'clock.
Now, you've told us the mysterious ways you get these animals from, but how do you know how to take care of them? What are you reading? I wouldn't know where to start.
A bit of everything. Like I say, I've got a lot of books that I like to dig into. I also ask a lot of friends that are big on frogs and they're big on lizards. You learn a lot as you have them, really. As long as you're giving them the requirements they need, they flourish and you can make it better.
And where's it going to stop your collection? What's the ambition? How would you like to top your animal collection there? What would be the ultimate beast that you want in your room?
I don't know. I have a huge wish list of animals, but for me it's probably breeding insects at the moment. There's a lot of insects that are taken from the wild and sold into the pet trade as opposed to captive bred in this country, so I'd like to breed a lot of spiders at home and put them into the pet trade as opposed to actually taking them from the wild.
And what's top of the wish list then? Go on, you mentioned you had one.
There's loads. Literally, it's probably about 100 animals. I don't have a top one, but I really like Fiji iguanas. They're a really pretty lizard.
What's so special about the Fiji iguana then, apart from the fact they look quite nice?
I don't know, honestly, I couldn't tell you. I'm just fascinated by a lot of different things about them. They've got this lovely green and blue coloration. They're vegetarians, they're quite small iguanas, so they're just a bit of everything.
And you're working at Sea Life London at the moment as well, helping the animals there. Tell us more about the role that you have in the aquarium.
So at Sea Life London, my main job is actually running the sort of the rainforest area. So I look after all the spiders, all the frogs and all the lizards and snakes that we have. I come in every day, make sure they've got food, water. I also do a lot of the other rainforest animals like the big catfish, our crocodiles we have as well. I'm learning other stuff as well, so I'm doing a bit of jellyfish work. I'm learning to feed the sharks and prepare the food every day, so it literally is a bit of everything.
Feed the sharks? Do you go underwater for that?
No, we pole feed from the surface.
Oh, okay, all right. But still, it's a lot of fun. Ross, you see, it's a testament to, if you've got a passion when you're young about creatures, you can make a career out of that. Thank you so much, Ross Hickles, for coming on the Fun Kids Science Weekly to tell us all about it.
You're more than welcome.
It's time for today's Dangerous Dan, all about the most mean, deadly and evil things in the universe. And this week it sums all three of those up, because we're looking at the laughing sickness. Kuru is an extremely rare disorder that was once common among the Four People, who are a tribe that live in the island of Papua New Guinea, which is in the ocean, Australia way. And kuru, it causes your nervous system, so that's your brain, your spine, your nerves that go all around your body, it causes them to wither away. And while they do that, while they're withering, some kind of strange things happen. You get body tremors. Every part of you shakes uncontrollably. Your muscles start to do their own thing, which means your legs, your arms, they'll be firing themselves around. You can't swallow, you can't stay awake either, and then the most strange symptom comes. Uncontrollable fits of laughter. You just spasm with hysteria. You can't stop cackling. You're laughing like a hyena. Or maybe if you've just seen your dad trying to squeeze into a tight pair of jeans after eating one too many Easter eggs. That's why they call it the laughing sickness. Now, its strangeness doesn't stop there, though, because the disorder... This is quite gross. Brace yourself. The disorder is caused by cannibalism. Because the four people, when one of their tribe died, they would cook and they would eat the body out of respect. So it was this celebration, this tribute to the dead, that caused kuru, the laughing sickness. We'll have a go at untying that knot of science questions that's currently muddling up your mind in a sec with the help of a top science expert. First, it's time to open up our map app on the show. This is with Marina Ventura. It's where we look at how the weather around our world has changed over billions of years.
Marina Ventura's Climate Explorers.
Hi there, Marina Ventura here. I love finding out about the natural world, and that includes the Earth's climate. We know that weather can change from one day to the next, but climates can change too, over the time span of years, centuries, or even longer. So, I'm on a mission to fill MapApp with the latest climate information with the help of some awesome climate explorers. Come on then, let's go! Earth is very old, 4.5 billion years old, in fact. It can be really hard to get your head around such a big number, especially as humans have only been around for a tiny amount of that time. That said, I bet you know a bit about how life on Earth has changed. Here's a clue. You know about dinosaurs, right? Luckily, we don't need to worry about them anymore. Well, just as types of life on Earth have changed over time, so has the global climate. Come on, let's find out what's behind those changes.
You've already hit on one thing behind changes, Marina. Types of life can affect the climate. When the Earth was very young, even though there wasn't as much heat coming from the sun, the planet was very hot and gassy. And that's because there weren't any plants to absorb these gases. These gases acted a bit like a blanket and stopped the heat escaping, so air temperatures went up. As life on Earth developed, plants evolved and grew in number. As they were able to absorb gases like carbon dioxide, they helped reduce the blanket effect and cooled temperatures down. And temperatures cooled down. For the last few million years, the sun has been causing climates to change. Stars like the sun get hotter as they age, and today the Earth gets more heat from the sun than it did when life was starting to develop on our planet. And the sun itself is always changing. Giant dark spots called sunspots are always moving across its surface, causing the sun to give off slightly more energy, which makes the Earth a bit warmer.
So what else makes climates naturally change?
Well, something else that comes in cycles is all to do with the Earth's orbit, the way it moves around the sun. The shape of the orbit changes gradually from a circle to more of an oval in a cycle that lasts about 100,000 years. This makes the Earth move further away from the sun at times, so less of the sun's energy reaches the planet. The Earth also tilts as it orbits, and that tilt can be bigger at some times than others. This means that parts of the Earth become closer to the sun, and so hotter in summer, and others are further away, and so colder in winter.
So naturally, there will be cycles of different climates as the Earth's orbit changes, and as the energy the planet gets from the sun varies, as well as what kind of plants and animals are living. These are all reasons why the climate has naturally changed, and will continue to do so.
But don't forget, there are things which can affect climates which aren't related to our orbit of the sun. Remember the dinosaurs!
Good point, Mappy. You'll probably know that scientists believe the dinosaurs died out because a giant meteorite crashed into the Earth. The meteorite caused a dust cloud which blocked out the sun, causing temperatures to drop. Many living things on Earth died. Something similar happens when volcanoes erupt. Clouds of ash can fill the skies, sometimes for many years, blocking out sunlight and causing global temperatures to drop. Scientists have noticed that in the last 100 years or so, the climate has changed in other, unexpected ways. Whilst we are in the middle of a naturally warmer part of the cycle, temperatures have risen much more quickly than they have before. This is because of the effect that humans have on the environment, and it's something we'll be finding out more about.
That's right. All with the help of some real-life climate explorers. Come on, Marina. Load me up.
Good job, Mappy. See you soon, everyone.
Marina Ventura's Climate Explorers, supported by the Natural Environment Research Council, the science of the natural world. Find out more at funkidslive.com/marina.
Now, I know that you love listening to this show every week, right, and getting answers to questions about science that you didn't even know you had. But what about the questions about science that you do know you have? You know, that the problems about the universe that are just racking around your brain, they're bouncing off the corners of your mind and you just can't quite figure it out. And like, maybe you're wondering what the rings of Saturn actually are and why they stay up in the air. Or you're figuring out how aeroplanes actually manage to take you on holiday and fly. Well, I can help you out with that. All you need to do is to send over your science question to my page on the website funkidslive.com, or you can do it on your phone or tablet through the free Fun Kids app, and I'm going to ask them to a top science expert really soon on this show for you. And I promise, it doesn't matter that the question can be as serious or as silly as you fancy. If it's about science, it's fine. That's all I care about. Send me your problem right now, your question, please, over to my page at funkidslive.com. It's time to talk about all the science that's been in the news this week. Now, an unusually transparent galaxy the size of our own, it's been found, and it's asking new questions for astrophysicists. This is because it contains no dark matter at all. And dark matter is what scientists think are an essential building block of the universe. So to find a galaxy with just regular matter in it, nothing dark at all, it may change everything that scientists thought they knew about how the universe works. Also, and this is good if you enjoyed our chat last week, all about saving our seas from plastics, well, people in England will soon have to pay a deposit when they're buying drinks with plastic bottles. This is to try and boost recycling and to cut waste. So what happens is you pay for your drink at the shop, but then you get some cash back afterwards if you take the bottle back so they can destroy it safely. And finally, a team of scientists from Manchester is developing detection equipment to take to Antarctica to find loads of missing meteorites that they think have fallen to Earth. Now, the tech will look for key signs of iron from the meteorites in the ice deep down, and it's already been tested in the Arctic, in the North Pole, to see how it works. They've managed to find the GPS coordinates and log the data of some dummy meteorites that they'd placed in the glaciers, so it's all working, and they'll be heading south really soon. Now, very quickly, before I tell you about all the ways that you can listen to our brilliant Fun Kids Science series, I thought I'd play one for you. This is from Age of the Dinosaurs, a load of adventures that you can download and listen to right now for free on your phone or tablet, on the Fun Kids app and over at funkidslive.com. And we're travelling back in time to the Jurassic period to have a look at the prehistoric beasts that lived under the sea.
Travel back in time to the Age of the Dinosaur
at the Natural History Museum.
Imagine going back in time, not 100 years or 1,000 years, but millions of years. To the Age of the Dinosaur. Welcome to the Jurassic period, which existed between 145 and 200 million years ago. With the supercontinent Pangaea continuing to separate, more and more big watery lagoons were forming, and along with the new oceans, were teeming with life, from the tiny to the monstrous.
Wow, so many animals, but where are the dinosaurs?
Dinosaurs didn't live in the sea, but all of the first creatures to appear on Earth did. On the seabed, you would see sponges that looked like squishy lumps, tiny corals that were building huge rocky reefs and starfish. These animals had been around for millions of years before dinosaurs, and are just like those you'd find on the beach today.
Hey, look at that huge shellfish with wavy tentacles. Cool.
That's an ammonite. It's a close relative of squid and octopuses, whose ancestors had already been around for 150 million years before the first dinosaurs appeared. They came in all sizes. Some were as big as 2 meters wide. The hard shell protected its squishy body, and its tentacles were used for swimming and catching food.
Quick, get out of the way! Something big's coming!
Make way for a plesiosaur, one of the Jurassic period's biggest beasts. Plesiosaurs were sea creatures with tubby bodies, 4 flippers, and a short tail. Some had long, slender necks and small heads, while others had huge heads but short, powerful necks. They were both agile and terrifying. Some of the biggest, like Liopleurodon, were at least 10 meters long. That's nearly as long as a bus. They had sharp teeth that could be over 30 centimeters long. They were the top predators in the ocean, feeding on whatever marine reptiles and fish they could grab.
Let's get out of here.
Away from the oceans in the watery lagoons lived even more sea monsters. Fast fish eaters like the ichthyosaurs were dolphin-like creatures with a tail fin and 4 flippers. Temnodontosaurus was a massive ichthyosaur, over 10 meters long, with huge eyes that helped him see in the gloomy water. Since ichthyosaurs didn't have gills, they couldn't breathe underwater and had to come to the surface to breathe, just like whales do today.
Paleontology. Pick.
Fossilized skeletons don't just tell paleontologists what creatures looked like. They can tell us a lot more. For example, from fossils of pregnant ichthyosaurs, we know that they gave birth to live young in the sea. No fossils of pregnant plesiosaurs have ever been found, but we know their ancestors laid eggs, so they probably came out on land to make nests, a bit like turtles. Travel back in time to the age of the dinosaur.
The new interactive exhibition at the Natural History Museum. Walk alongside life-size moving animatronic dinosaurs and other strange creatures among the smells and sounds of the prehistoric Jurassic swamps and Cretaceous deserts. Find out more at nhm.ac.uk.
But watch out for what's around the corner.
I think a brutal dinosaur is probably the best place to leave this podcast for this week. Get out while we're all still alive. It's the Fun Kids Science Weekly. We'll be back next week with some more of the most amazing things that exist in our universe. Now, you can catch up on all the brilliant Fun Kids Science series for free on your phone or tablet. Go to wherever you get your podcasts from. You know, places like iTunes. You can download them as well through the Fun Kids app. And you can have a listen at funkidslive.com. And you can find Fun Kids all over the country on your DAB digital radio on that free Fun Kids app. And as always, at funkidslive.com.
So that was a podcast from the children's radio station Fun Kids. Listen on DAB digital radio across the UK or online at funkidslive.com.